health and getting healthy, one of our favorite topics around here. And it's time once again to visit with our friend Dr. Peter Van Uhl of Integrated Holistic Health. And when we were told one of the topics today would be the gut microbiome, I thought that's going to be good. What is it? So let's start right there. Welcome. Good to see you again,
Thank
Doc.
You. Great
the gut microbiome, how does it affect our health, and why do we need to care about this?
Yeah. Well, so the microbiome is kind of the collection of all the organisms that live in and on us. So there are far more cells. 90% of all the cells that are part of that human body are actually these particular bacteria, fungi, etc., that all have a purpose. So the organisms that live on our skin, on your tongue, in your sinuses, and throughout the whole intestinal tract and all that, they are very important in helping the production of vitamins. They're helping in the breakdown and metabolism of cholesterols, of estrogens. And they also, very importantly, communicate with our brain. You know, if you think about it, they are the organisms that kind of line our external lining, so our skin, but also the area which we breathe through, which we drink and put food into. So everything that we're being exposed to the outside world needs to give feedback to the brain to say, is it safe? Is it good? Is it bad? And kind of looking back to our evolutionary origins, you know, the first berry a person ate, if was it poisoned or not, is it sour or sweet? So all that feedback needs to go to the brain.
So what you're saying then is that the gut microbiome, you're talking about now having a healthy gut. Is that what we're hearing?
Right.
You know,
so
people talking
about the microbiome is all of it.
But
the key area that is now being looked at is the gut, because of course everything relating to digestion and you know, whether it's colon cancer, stomach cancers, all that kind of stuff. But so mostly what they're finding is that there's about 240 million neurons that are giving feedback from our gut to our brain. And so it's begging the question, what are the potentially the foods, the chemicals, the antibiotics that we're taking in? How are they affecting that microbiome? How are they shifting the type of bacteria that live there? You know, it's kind of like having a soil where you have, you know, worms and all kinds of organisms that help your plants to grow. And if you maybe, you know, spray that with all kinds of chemicals and now you have sterile, infertile soil, what's going to grow out of that? It's kind of similar to the microbiome.
And so so what are the things that that make that that gut or, you know, whatever it is, unhealthy? What are the things that keep it like good soil or make it bad soil?
Yeah. Well, so probably by now, most of your listeners have heard of probiotics, but there's also something called prebiotics. So the prebiotics are kind of like the fertilizer for these good, healthy organisms, right? They want to be fed. And so vegetable fibers, it turns out, are great nurturing substances for these organisms. All the fermented foods, you know, like sauerkraut, kimchi, fermented soy products, etc. So these are all substances that are very good to, and as a matter of fact, they're looking at even, you know, substances that come out of the soil, even some of the dirt that could be on that soil might actually be beneficial for our own diversity of these good bacteria.
So you want to make sure that the soil is this a good reason to eat organic then, so that the soil and whatever is left on the products that you're eating are not filled with pesticides and things that could be harmful?
Well, so indeed in two ways. First of all, because indeed there is that the nutrients that are going to be in that organic food will help to further cultivate a more diversity in that microflora. But also, on the other hand, the pesticides, the antibiotics, the food additives, et cetera, that might otherwise be in certain foods could destroy certain types of these good, healthy bacteria and thereby limit the diversity of these organisms. And as we know, everything has a purpose, right? I mean, we don't like to think of mosquitoes having a positive purpose, but, you know, if they're bird food, at least they're feeding the birds, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So it's a matter of looking at, and this is what's being studied now is, you know, years ago we started with Acidophilus, right, as a probiotic. Well, now there's all these different organisms that we're finding out are very beneficial and are very important also, for example, in the production of dopamine and serotonin, these neurotransmitters that help us to give this bliss feeling.
Okay, so what do you say to people who are very pro the current farming industry in the U.S. who continue to say, none of that has been proven. That is crazy talk, basically. None of it has any meaning, and people just should not listen to this.
Well, I would say two things. First of all, there is a lot of research on it, and it's just usually people who say there's no proof, it's because they don't read the research. And secondly, it doesn't take a scientist to have common sense to say, if you're going to go to the store, and if they just put a regular apple there and they put another apple next to it with a whole list of all the chemicals that were sprayed on that apple, which apple do you think people are going to pick?
Hey, I'm just glad Orion Samuelson's on vacation this week. I have a couple of questions. First of all, assuming there's not a lot of sugar in it, not a lot of fruit sugar in it, is yogurt something that helps the gut bacteria or microbiomes or whatever?
In theory. So what that means is that, yes, yogurt is a fermented, cultured food. The problem with it is that, A, a lot of that, the milk from the yogurt is coming from cows that are being fed corn and soy and injected with antibiotics. Number two, it's pasteurized. So it's been heated to a point where there couldn't be any bacteria in it. It's like your milk is pasteurized. Why? Because they don't want it to have bacteria in it. So if you kill it and then you put a lid on it and have it seal it,
so is there any yogurt?
Technically, indeed, the yogurt is a waste of time. Unless you have fresh yogurt from a farm that's fresh, you know, raw.
And we hear about gut bacteria helping digestion, aiding in the production of certain vitamins. And you hear that that term, gut bacteria, and you think, okay, well, that means it's good to have things in our gut that are not completely clean, that are it's bacteria. It's thought of as something negative. But in this case, it's positive.
I love that you bring that up, because I think until still now, when you say bacteria to somebody, people think, oh, I got to get wipes, or I got to get, you know,
right. Mm-hmm.
Get rid of it. It's bad. And actually what we're finding is that the same thing that, you know, even way back about 100 years ago is the whole discussion around Bichon, and I think we've already had this once on the program, is this notion that bacteria aren't necessarily really either good or bad. It just depends on the environment they live in. And so if there's a more inflammatory, acidic environment, they can start behaving a different way. And a perfect example is that E. coli are essential to our health and well-being in the intestinal tract. Hmm. If they migrate into the bladder, they can then, you know, be the source of a bladder infection. So it you know, it's not a matter of bacteria good or bad. It's more about where they're able to thrive. And then, of course, the immune you know, the immune system that surrounds that area, you know, that is able to keep it in check, if you will, which again is why we need that diversity of these organisms, because they keep themselves in check. If there's too many, you know, if there's one dominant group, they take over, and that's never a good thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I know that this is a really long conversation that we, you know, obviously can't have a long conversation about this right now, but
why not?
Essence,
we can tell Roe to start at 5 instead of 3.
He would have to start, yeah, like 5 or, or 6 o'clock. In essence, why are what is wrong with GMOs, genetically modified organisms and products? What is wrong with them? And also, what's the big deal with at least labeling them so that you know if you're eating it or not?
Well, I know. I feel like I want to start a movement that says, I want GMOs in my food, so please label them so I know which one to pick. You know, and you start with reverse psychology.
Hey, that's very good.
Because, indeed, if they're safe, then why wouldn't you want to label it? Well, of course, that's because, indeed, I think what we've been doing so far is it's always this matter of let's get this in. And then later, when the research comes out in 20, 30 years, then we can say, oh, gee, yeah, I guess that wasn't a good idea. But, of course, all those people are gone now. You know, kind of like the way they gave women Premarin, you know, horses, mares, urine as a hormone, you know, all the problems with that. Anyway, what is the problem with GMOs? It is indeed a lengthy conversation, but it ultimately comes down to what scientists have now found is that the way the pesticide is you could say modified into the grain, it causes, and again, this is probably depending on dosage and amount of time of exposure, it ultimately causes inhibition, which means a blockage of certain liver enzymatic functions. So in other words, there are certain functions in your liver that help you to break foods down, to break chemicals down, and this process is blocked. It's called a P450 enzymatic.
It's blocked by what?
It's blocked by these pesticides. So, and contrary to popular belief, people think that, oh, if it's genetically engineered, we no longer have to pesticide it. Well, it still needs to be. They still need to be
pesticides. Well, they put more pesticides, yes, because they're genetically engineered to,
right,
survive.
Correct. And so it's also about how it impacts, you talk about diversity. So part of the problem, too, with this whole system is that it really impairs the diversity of the organisms. Besides the fact that it also, for example, bees that would feed off of the flowering of any of these plants basically are ingesting pesticides and get killed. So it also isn't good for the environment in general. Back to that microbiome.
My breakfast of cornflakes and yogurt, forget that. I think that's what the takeaway
and
is.
And your
for
lunch
me.
Of barbecued baked potato chips.
Well, it said 65%
the
less fat.
The fourth ingredient is sugar. The third one, I think, is cornstarch. There's not even any potatoes in those baked potatoes.
Well, and that then we're going to have a cholesterol afternoon talk, because that's another whole thing with, you know, the fat myth, you know.
All right. We'll talk more with Dr. Peter Van Uhl in a moment. Visiting with Dr. Peter Van Uhl of Integrated Holistic Health, and he's part of a lecture that will be going on next week, Tuesday night, at the Wilmette Recreation Center, Tuesday night at 7. And, Doc, you're going to be talking about some suggestions for parents. It's back to school time, and you have some tips for grade school, high school, and college age kids, or for their parents anyway. What are some of the things you'll be talking about?
So, there's going to be a doctor, a family nurse practitioner, a health coach, and we're just basically going to be helping parents to make it a little easier to get their kids back to school, happier, healthier, and for both parents and children in the up through college, even with some good tips and pointers. So some of the things we'll be covering, among others, are sleep, the importance of play, and obviously food, of course, and just some a lot of practical, helpful tips.
And give us one thing that maybe people don't normally hear about, don't normally think, well, this would be something I need to do that they overlook.
Yeah, well, sleep, for example, actually, according to the American Academy of Physicians, of Family Physicians, they recommend 11 hours of sleep a night for a child. Now, 11 hours... That's there's not a lot of kids getting that.
For what ages?
Up through high school years.
Okay,
yeah.
First of all, good luck with that.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Good luck with being able to have enough time to do homework.
Well, that's the thing. I think between sports and homework. However, if you look at the studies that have been done on the importance of sleep and memory, you know, for all the kids out there who think, oh, I have to stay up late and cram, there was a laboratory experiment with mice where they trained the mice for an hour and then let them sleep. And the other group of mice, they trained for 3 hours and then interrupted their sleep. Well, the mice who only trained for 1 hour but got deep sleep, they did much better.
Yeah,
so technically,
I mean, it makes sense.
It's, well, more people would think, oh, the longer I study, the more I'll know this stuff. But if you show up at the exam or the test fatigued, you're not going to do as well.
When are those mice going to unionize? They're being abused every year.
Yes. Okay, so here's what I wanted to talk to you about. I was so glad that you're in here, because I've been talking about the fact that I had this unbelievable severe pain in my neck. That
Not Bob?
And it was not Bob. Yeah,
the other pain in her neck.
But I went through, you know, the process, whatever. Got an MRI. I was told by four MDs, doctors that I had, you know, mild degeneration, but it wasn't anything that would cause the severe pain. They said you know your bones look like somebody, you know, your age or younger, is what they said. So it was like inexplicable, this pain. And then somebody suggested I read this book, Healing Back Pain by Dr. Sarno. Mm-hmm. And then there's another book that he wrote about the mind-body prescription, is what it's called. And so I don't know if it worked, because I'll know really if, like, in a year from now I never get the pain again. But how is it possible that it could work for so many people and no drugs, no medication of any kind, and you go back to being able to have a super active life, and you know what the reasons are?
Yes. Well, first of all, as holistic physicians, this is something we've recognized for a long, long time, and also recognize that there's even techniques like neuroemotional technique whereby you can actually access the connection between how the body is physically expressing your emotions and how they're connected. Now, if just simply think about looking at a person and you see them frowning, now you see another person next to them and you see them smiling, okay? And now you're being asked, which of these two people is worried and which of these two people just won the lottery? Do you think we're going to have 100% correct answers?
Probably.
Probably. Why? How would we know that? Are you intuitive, or all the people have a crystal ball? How do we know this?
Well, because you see a happy person, a happy
face. So what is? How do you make the difference between a happy face versus a frowning face? It's the muscles of your face,
right,
that are acting differently. So the muscles in your body are actually expressing how you feel.
Now, that's interesting.
Think about
it. It makes sense.
Yes, but that's it is how it is. You know, you're not likely to see that person who just won the lottery all bent over and talking like, yeah, I just won the lottery. And
right.
You know, versus a person maybe who's really having a lot of stress and trouble, standing upright with their arms in the air with a big smile on their face saying, I am the worst person in the world.
Right. So
again,
what this doctor said,
it matches.
Voice,
yeah, the mood matches the body.
Right. So our nervous system really is just conveying the information we have in our heads, in our minds, in our brains, in our awareness, and conveying it to our physiology, whether that's the muscles, whether it's your joints, whether it's, you know, and so at any point, if you feel tired, you're going to feel more hunched over, you're going to have a harder time going up those stairs. And if you feel great, and that can be just a sense of telling yourself.
And what this doctor says is that it is repressed anxiety, fear, or anger that is causing that pain, which is a benign pain, no matter what they tell you they found in your spine, is what he's saying.
Well, so talking specifically about the spine, yes. Well, in Chinese medicine, the bladder meridian is related to fear and feeling stuck, and so that obviously matches. And this is, you know, knowledge that's 5,000 years old, by the way. And the liver meridian, for example, and part of the wood element, is associated with movement forward and the power and the ability to move, and regulates tendons and ligaments and cartilage and all that. So it all totally matches up.
I thought you were going to burst into that song about the bones that are connected. What's that song? The neck bones connect. Dr. Yeah. Peter Van Uyl, Integrated Holistic Health. Next time, let's talk about the fat myth. Should not be as concerned about cholesterol numbers as compared to other numbers?
He wants permission to eat those chips.
The latest research coming out of Japan shows that elderly people with higher cholesterol levels had much lower rates of dementia and memory loss than people with lower cholesterol levels. Our brain is one big glob of cholesterol, so.
Okay, so
I know that's true in my case.
Because we have a lot more things to talk about.
Thanks, doctor.
Yeah, thank you.
Talk to you soon.